Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 19, Text 32. I think it's the wrong text here, if I'm not mistaken. 33, actually. This is the perfection of spiritual knowledge. Absorbing the intelligence in me constitutes mental equilibrium, and complete discipline of the senses is self-control. Tolerance and means patiently enduring unhappiness, and steadfastness occurs when one conquers the tongue and the genitals. The greatest charity is to give up all aggression towards others, and renunciation of lust is understood to be real austerity. Real heroism is to conquer one's natural tendency to enjoy material life. And reality is saying the Supreme Personality of God is everywhere. Truthfulness means to speak the truth in a pleasing way, as declared by great sages. Cleanliness is a detachment in foolish activities, whereas renunciation is a sannyasa order of life. The true desirable wealth of human beings is religiousness, and I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, am sacrifice. Religious remuneration is devotion to the Acharya with the purpose of acquiring spiritual instruction, and the greatest strength is the pranayama system of breath control. Purport and translation by Sri A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Krishna here describes those qualities that are desirable for persons advancing in human life. Shama or mental equilibrium means to fix the intelligence in Lord Krishna. Mere peacefulness without Krishna consciousness, dull and useless state of mind. Dhamma or discipline means first to control one's own senses. One wants to discipline one's children. Disciples or followers, without controlling one's own senses, one becomes a mere laughing stock. Tolerance means patiently enduring unhappiness, such as that provoked by the insults or negligence of others. Concerning steadfastness, if one does not control the tongue and genitals, then any other steadfastness is useless. Real charity means to denounce all aggression towards others. One gives money to charitable causes, but at the same time engages in exploitative business enterprises or abusive political tactics, one's charity is worth nothing at all. Austerity means to give up lust and sense gratification, and to observe prescribed vows such as Ekadasi. It does not mean inventing whimsical methods of torturing the material body. Real heroism is to conquer one's lower nature. Certainly everyone likes to propagate his own fame as a brilliant person, but everyone is also subject to lust, anger, greed and so forth. Therefore, if one can conquer these lower characteristics generated from the modes of passion and ignorance, one is a greater hero than those who merely destroy their political opponents through intrigue and violence. One can develop equal vision by giving up jealousy and envy, and by recognizing the existence of the soul within every material body. This attitude pleases the Supreme Lord, who then reveals himself, solidifying forever one's equal vision. Merely describing things that exist does not constitute the last word in the perception of reality. One must also see the true spiritual equality of all living entities in all situations. Truthfulness means that one should speak in a pleasing way, so that there will be a beneficial effect. One becomes attached to pointing out faults of others in the name of truth. Such fault-finding will not be appreciated by saintly persons. The bona fide spiritual master speaks the truth in such a way that people can elevate themselves to the spiritual platform. And one should learn this art of truthfulness. One is attached to material things. His body and mind are understood to be always polluted. Cleanliness therefore means to give up material attachment, not merely to frequently rinse one's skin with water. Real renunciation is giving up one's false sense of proprietorship over one's relatives and wife, and not just giving away material objects. While real wealth is to be religious, Sacrifice is the personality of God in Himself, because the performer of sacrifice, to be successful, must absorb this consciousness in the personality of Godhead and not in temporary material rewards that may accrue from sacrifice. Real religious remuneration means that one should serve saintly person who can enlighten one with spiritual knowledge. One may offer remuneration to a spiritual master who has enlightened him by distributing the same knowledge to others, thereby pleasing the Acharya. Preaching work thus constitutes the highest form of remuneration. By performing the pranayama system of spiritual control, one can easily subdue the mind, and one who can in this way perfectly control the restless mind, the most powerful person. Om Jnana Kumrata Jnana Ranjira Svakya Chakshara Mrata Yonata Smi Sri Guru Nama Namo Svadaya Svistaya Bhula Shimi Jabhakta Swami Nidhanami Nama Acharya Pagpaya Kripagpataya Nigaur Kaddam Daya Nagaramda Tai Buddhi Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nidhinamini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Vishesha Swami Bhakti Vistara Vishri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Vaidagadala Hare Gaur Bhakti Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we are now in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and this particular chapter is called Perfection of Spiritual Knowledge. For those who are coming here for the first time or newcomers, this is a discussion that is going on between Uddhava and Lord Krishna. And Uddhava is asking questions. I'm sure somebody would have explained to you a few days ago. Uddhava is asking questions like, what is, like, who's the best friend, what is truth, what is sacrifice, and, you know, the whole, all the important questions. And Prabhupada says this, all the items mentioned in these five verses are defined in different ways by different cultures and societies throughout the world. And let's hear from Lord Krishna himself what he's got to say. Now, this particular canto, 11th canto, is even appreciated by the Mayavadis or impersonalists. And they call this canto, Jnanaskanda. Jnanaskanda, skanda means canto, jnana means knowledge. So the canto of knowledge, this particular 11th canto is considered the canto of knowledge. Now before that, we'll have to find out, I'll come back later, why they are so excited about this 11th canto. Now before that, we all understand that the Lord Himself personally speaks in the Bhagavad Gita, and the Lord is spoken about in Srimad Bhagavatam. So everybody knows that. We all talk about Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken about Him. In Gita, He Himself speaks. But there is an exception, especially this particular portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord is speaking directly. For those who are interested in philosophy, I mean, these are verses, every one of these verses are uttered by Lord Krishna Himself. So those who are interested in philosophy, if you take this book and quietly sit down under a tree, you can go into ecstasy, because the Lord spoke 5,000 years ago, and because of the mercy of some pure devotees, it's available for you. And when you're reading these verses, you can actually feel that you are, that Krishna is directly relating to you. So it's very exciting. It's not really exciting for the impersonalist. Of course, it's very exciting for us. It should be exciting for us. Now, Uddhava is not only a friend, he's also a devotee. We all know that. There are some interesting facts about Uddhava. Uddhava, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, three people were given this title of Haridasas. Hari, of course, is Krishna. Dasa means servant. That means they're really most topmost servant of Krishna. So he has this special distinction of being called as a Haridasa. Two others were Yudhishthira and Govardhan himself, the mountain, and the presiding deity. Now, both, there is a comparison between, of course, Bhagavad Gita, and because of this glorious thing, of course, in the Gita he speaks himself, and he takes the glory, he calls it the Bhagavad Gita, my song, the Bhagavan's song. Now, but in these verses, the glory goes to Uddhava. These verses are called Uddhava Gita. It gives the glory to the disciple, or his devotee rather. Now there are other similarities and differences between this Bhagavad Gita and Uddhava Gita. Both of them start off with Vishadas. Vishada means grief. The first chapter in the Bhagavad Gita is called Arjuna Vishada Yoga. The yoga of Arjuna's grief. Because he is grieving. What is he grieving about? He is grieving because he has to do battle. And in front of the battlefield is his teachers. All his spiritual masters are there. Kripacharya, Dronacharya. And then this is his grandfather. His favorite grandfather. The grandfather who took him when he was very small. Taught him so many things. And Krishna says, just kill them. Kill everyone. So of course he's shocked. I mean, even as a pained comparison will be, you are those of you who are initiated and you got spiritual masters, would you do anything to displease? Forget about. Just to displease will you do? And somebody says, go and kill them. How are you going to do it? So it was a real, he was in his crossroads of his life and he was really confused. At that moment, of course, he drops the Gandiva and the box of arrows and all that. And he's grieving. And then, of course, Krishna takes over from the second chapter. Similarly, Uddhava is also grieving. Now, what is Uddhava grieving about? He is grieving because the Lord is going to leave soon. He says, I'm winding up my pastimes and I'm leaving soon. If the children make too much of noise, the mothers must be responsible because we're trying to glorify here, you know. Please understand. And so Uddhava's grief was that the Lord is leaving and he's grieving. And so both of them had this, disappointments in them. And Krishna explains to both, of course, at the end of everything, and like in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, Nashto Moha Smriti Labda. Nashto Moha means, my bewilderment is gone, my disillusionment is gone. And Smriti Labda, my memory, I've regained my memory. Karishye Vacharam Tava, he says, now I'm ready to perform whatever you tell me to do. See, there was confusion in the beginning, there was grief in the beginning, there was bewilderment in the beginning, but towards the end, everything was clear. Similarly, Uddhava too, there was grief in the beginning, and towards he was also saying, Karishye Vacharam Tava, I'm ready to act according to your instructions. And what does he do? He doesn't tell him to take up the Gandiva. He says, you, Uddhava, go to Badrinath. Badrinath is a place, even there, it's still there. This is where the incarnations of Naranarayana even reside. This is called Aprakrita Leela, which means they are not manifested. The unmanifested pastimes of the Lords are going on. They are there, Vyasa is there, so many people are still there, we can't see, of course, you are not qualified to see. People like when Madhvacharya went up to Badri and Vyasa himself appeared before him and took him. In fact, he gave a personal audience to Naranarayana Rishis and all that. So they are all there and they are waiting. Now even the kings, the solar system and the lunar system kings, some of them are hiding there, waiting for Satyayuga to come to re-establish the monarchical system. That's what our scriptures say. Anyway, back to our story. So he says, go back, go to Badrinath and perform austerity. Of course, you know, Uddhava was excited because the Lord is giving personal instruction. And then he goes. Now, the only difference is, there is the difference between Bhagavad Gita and the Uddhava Gita. Bhagavad Gita is like an army general giving orders in the battlefield, like, you know, telling him, do this, do that, you have to do. If you don't do this, it will happen. If you do this, it will happen. Goes on like that. But in the Uddhava Gita, it's more like, you know, the same Lord Krishna is very mellowed here. He is more like a mother feeding the children, or feeding a child. He takes the food, takes the food and then wants to feed the mother, feed the child. And the child says, no, I'm not hungry. And look at the moon, and then, yeah, what is wrong with the moon? You see some black spots? Yes, yeah, do you want to know why? Yes, okay, you take one mouthful, then I'll tell you. Like that, the mother feeds the child with a little bit of, you know, thing. illustrations, you know, like some stories, some cheating, but making it very palatable. It's like you can say, like you've got a plate of, say, pasta, and one is, of course, you're eating with the fork, that is Bhagavad Gita, the same pasta. But you have to be very careful, because if you're not careful, this fork can go into your mouth and poke all over. The other one, of course, you know, somebody is feeding you, like your mother is feeding you, making sure the chili is out and the things you don't like, you know, I don't like that. Okay, I'll remove for you. I don't like this. Okay, I'll remove for you. And that way the mother is feeding the child, making it very palatable. But it's the same pasta that goes in, and then the ultimate, result is the same. So in Uddhava Gita you'll find that there are a lot of illustrations, parables, moral stories, so many things. And funny stories, the Avadhut, he's got 20, you know, starts off with the Avadhut. And Avadhut means one who is totally renounced. And he's talking about 24 gurus. And one of the gurus is a prostitute. Can you imagine? A prostitute being a guru? But that's how it is. The birds and the bees and the mountains and the sky, every one of them is a guru. And because the Avadhut was answering all these questions, this particular thing is also called Avadhut Gita. This Uddhava Gita is also known as Avadhut. Just imagine, the Lord here, is glorifying his disciples. And it's also known as Aila Gita. Somebody might say, what is this Aila about? Which we have not read yet. We will be reading in the future. There is a king called King Aila. And King Aila has got a lot of questions to ask. And when these questions are answered, that way, that particular person, Aila, the King Aila, is given so much of importance, and this is called Aila Gita. So throughout this thing, you will find that Lord Krishna is always glorifying his disciples. Now, basically, this particular chapter is about knowledge and perfection of spiritual knowledge. So we'll have to have an overall understanding about what the spiritual knowledge is about, or what is knowledge is about. Ultimately, the top form, highest, knowledge means absolute truth. Isn't it? It's all about God. The supreme truth, the supreme knowledge, the highest knowledge, that's absolute. And this absolute truth, of course you all know that, it is just like, we're just doing a quick reference about what we're going to do. This knowledge has got five aspects, you all know that, Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala and Karma. And it also has got three features. The three features are Achit, Chit and Ishvara, which means matter, spirit and controller. So, in the beginning, when Brahma is creating, you'll understand that, of course there is knowledge, other knowledge, that's absolute truth, and there is condition and constitution knowledge. And what we are discussing is, everybody can say about spiritual, religion and all that, but if it is not, once you have graduated with this kind of understanding, then you'll understand what is condition knowledge and what is constitution knowledge, and you'll understand that most of the religions are all talking about condition knowledge, and which is not really useful for our hereafter, and we will reject that. And there are different kinds of knowledge as well. Now, in the beginning of creation, when Brahma was creating, there was, you know, the material nature, and there was turbulence of the material nature, and because of the turbulence of the material nature, there was sattva, and there was rajas and tamas. And it says that from sattva, he created demigods, from rajas, he created the ingredients to create the 14 planetary systems, and from tamas, he created intelligence. Now watch. He is creating intelligence from tamas, which means he is creating intelligence from ignorance. That's why in the Vedic system it's called tamasa buddhi. Buddhi means intelligence, but it's tamas. Tamas? How can there be intelligence from ignorance? It is just contradicting itself. Something wrong here, isn't it? How can, if at all you get some kind of knowledge from ignorance, that knowledge is ignorance. And if it is ignorance, it's not knowledge. This is nonsense. But then again, it's clearly stated that is tamasa buddhi. Because most of this so-called knowledge that is available all over, you go to universities, you get big degrees, they talk about everything. But what they don't talk about is, they don't talk about the spirit soul or its relationship with the Supreme Lord. That important knowledge is missing, and that's why. Then again, if Brahma doesn't have real knowledge, then how is he going to, what is going to happen? I mean, is Brahma himself ignorant? No. This is where we understand Brahma himself gets his real knowledge. From where? From the spirit soul within. Expansion of Lord Vishnu, expansion of Krishna. So he is getting real knowledge from the super soul. So that's a lesson for us. We also have to understand that we can get real knowledge from the super soul. Now, why do we need real knowledge? We need real knowledge because with real knowledge we can discriminate between what is temporary, what is permanent, what is matter, what is spirit, what is life, what is non-life. Otherwise, we'll be just looking at ourselves in the mirror and just eating, mating, sleeping and defending, and then one day then, you know, just go. So we have to have a better understanding about all this. Now, our understanding about knowledge, ajnana, jnana, vijnana. Ajnana means ignorance, of course. Jnana means knowledge. And vijnana means supreme knowledge or scientific knowledge. You can. But in the Vaishnava concept, ajnana means I am this body. You think I am this body? That is ignorance, ajnana. Jnana means I am not this body, I am spirit soul. You have gone one step higher. You have understood. Because the body is temporary, one day it is going to fail you. So you have understood that. So now you have come to ajnana. Jnana. Jnana means I am not this body, I am spirit soul. Vijnana, I am spirit soul, part and parcel of Supreme Lord Krishna. Once you have understood that, then. So our understanding, I'm impressing upon you these three things because we are going to understand what the Mayavadis say and about these things. So ajnana for us is not this body, I'm this body. Jnana is I'm not this body and spirit soul, I'm Brahmasmi, Prabhupada says. And then ultimately is I am spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. So in the yoga path, there are four types of yogas. All of us who are students of these things, we should know. There are four yoga systems. Call it Karma Yoga. Then there is Jnana Yoga. And there is Raja Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga, Hatha Yoga, all of them. There are different names for it. Ashtanga because there are eightfold steps. And ultimately Bhakti Yoga. Now, here in Jnana Yoga, I mean, I remember those days I used to read all this. So in Jnana Yoga, just like we have the nine processes and nine stages of devotion. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Mandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedanam. And then we have got the five stages of devotional service like Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha. And finally going to Bhava and Prema. We have all this. Similarly, in the Jnana Yoga, those who think that, the philosophical speculation about the Supreme Lord, they also have steps like this, and they call that sadhana, I don't want to make a mistake, sadhana chatustaya, which means the four processes of salvation. Just like we got stages, they have also the four stages of salvation. I'm saying all that because the words samo, dhamma and pratiksha and all this are mentioned in this particular verse, and also Prabhupada is explaining that. And in the purport, and like I said, why the Mayavadis get so excited about this canto, and they glorify 11th canto as Jnana Skanda, and that's why I just want to deliberate a little bit on this. So there's four steps, and it starts off with Viveka, Vairagya, and then Shat Sampat. Shat Sampat is the six virtues, they call it. And Samo, Dhamma and Titiksha, all that comes under there, in that particular aspect. And because, like when you're preaching, somebody might say, then you say, yeah, the Lord Krishna talks about all this. Of course, Lord Krishna is the one who gives everything. So we all know that he himself directly spoke all this. But Lord Krishna doesn't only speak Jnana, he speaks a lot about Bhakti. He says, surrender to me, that part they just forget it, they don't want to do that. Anyway, then, the fourth one is called Mumukshutva, which means an intense desire for liberation. In the Vaishnava concept, we say, don't desire for liberation. But in the Jnana Yoga concept, they say, desire for celibacy. In fact, they will say, these people will say, the jnana yoga is topmost. Like we say bhakti is the topmost, they say jnana is topmost. That's all they say. And they will argue with you for till the cows go home. Anyway, now what happens here is, when you have reached that stage where there is an intense desire for liberation, now you are ready. Ready for what? Now you are ready to meet the spiritual master, their spiritual master, guru. And for what? To get the real knowledge. And what is the real knowledge? Now the guru will tell you in your ears, you are God, you are Brahman. And then after that he is supposed to go into that kind of an attitude and do whatever he is doing. So in the impersonality or in this jnani school, anjnana means, ignorance means, I am this body. So we shake hands with them, yes, you and I say, I am this body. Then jnana means, I am Brahman, I am God. Because in the Vedic literature, many a times it is mentioned Atman and Brahman are one. You see, Devajam, you see, Atman and Brahman are one. So because the soul and God are one, so this is your God. That's what it means. And so they come to this conclusion. But then again, we have seen, of course, when those of us, we have studying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's books, and he explains very clearly about Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, which means simultaneously one and different. That means qualitatively the soul and God are the same, but quantitatively we are not. It's very, very clear. So whenever you say Atman and Brahman are one, yes, you can say constitutionally or qualitatively we are one. He is Satchitananda Vigraha, our soul, or we, the real us, is also Satchitananda Vigraha. Now, so that's where the confusion happens. But then again, it is very difficult to break through. I mean, many of you who have got this preaching experience with them, it's very difficult. But at least you should know that the Bhagavatam is not only one canto, there are 12 cantos. The Bhagavatam talks about how Krishna himself is creating the whole world, the whole universes. Krishna is doing so many things, and also he talks so much about devotion to him, which they conveniently forget. They just hold on to this only aspect. For them, the spiritual world doesn't exist. Like Krishna is coming just like you and me, just like there is something within us, so there is something within Krishna. He also suffers, just like you and me. And he goes, but that is not true, because there are so many verses here, so many chapters here about all those things. So now we come back to this age-old question. Knowledge or devotion, which is more important? Now, from the Bhagavad Gita, we understand one thing, that karmic knowledge is better than fruitive activity, and devotion is better than knowledge, isn't it? That is, jnana is better than karma, but bhakti is better than jnana. That is the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. Now some people may dispute that, oh you say that, but knowledge is not so important, devotion is important, then, but you know, knowledge is means for devotion, how can you get devotion, you know, without knowledge? So knowledge is definitely means for devotion, so knowledge is important. And they'll go on arguing. I mean, look at that, even in this battlefield, and Arjuna was giving this message to, isn't knowledge? He's giving knowledge to Arjuna, Krishna was giving knowledge to Arjuna. So what is the Bhagavad Gita? Is giving knowledge. So how can you say, you know, without, you know, knowledge is not important. Knowledge is very important. It's better than devotion. That's how they argue. And not only that, they go on, even if they know Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing with Prakasaranda Saraswati, he was discussing Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was discussing with Ramananda Raya on the banks of the Godavari, he was speaking to Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. What is all this discussion? It's all knowledge. He's giving them knowledge. And here, forget it, right now what's happening? Right now, Lord Krishna is giving knowledge to Uddhava. So, Uddhava is definitely, knowledge is definitely better than devotion. So they can argue like that. But knowledge, we have to understand, like I said earlier, all knowledge is not knowledge. When knowledge that is considered, what is knowledge considered by impersonal is not real knowledge. Here you will understand that the Supreme Lord Himself is giving this knowledge. Krishna speaking, the Baptist, Krishna speaking here, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking. So all of them, that's not just knowledge, that is real spiritual knowledge. So they say, do not come under the same category. It is true, we have to have some knowledge. Even Prabhupada was asked this question, said, and he said, yes, you have to. Supposing you want to buy some gold, you have to know something about gold. What is gold? What is its weight? How does it look? What is its price? If you know nothing about gold, and you walk into a blacksmith's shop and said, I want gold, he will say, how many kilos? How much is 1 kilo? For you, normally $3. For you, I'll give you $2. Okay, give me 10. Then you'll go back and say, I bought gold because of ignorance. So he says, you have to know something. It is important. That knowledge will assist in devotion, and otherwise why would Prabhupada write all these books? Because to glorify Krishna, so that we'll get some interest. Now, we all follow the Pancharatra system, or the Narada Pancharatra system. Now, let's have the last word from Narada himself in the Narada Bhakti Sutra. I just verified yesterday. In the Bhakti Sutra, there is a discussion, and it's sutra, of course. Sutra, it means short aphorisms, few words, a lot of meanings, and the explanations will be given. And in Sutra 28 to 32, there is this discussion, just few verses about knowledge, which is more important. And then there's a discussion about knowledge being the necessary for developing devotion, and also knowledge and bhakti, devotion are interdependent. You need both. You need this and you need that. And then what is the result of this devotion? So there is a discussion there, and Lord Brahma himself is answering as far as the result of the bhakti is concerned. Now, in that particular instance, there is this example is given. A very nice, interesting example. The example is about a palace, a king and a palace, and a hungry man and a beautiful meal. The king and the palace is, you know, this guy is describing about a palace. You know, the doors are so big, and you don't have to actually have guards to open the doors, you know, like this remote control now. You just do this way, and it opens up, and this way it closes. So the king is, wow, 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 and he said, this palace is like that, like that. But that alone is not enough. The king is not satisfied. He takes the sword, give me the palace. Don't sit talking, you know, I want the stuff. So that I can enjoy the, you know, I can really enjoy what he's talking, and I want to enjoy it. Similarly, another example is given is a tasty meal. You get a nice plate of prasadam, there is Bhaktiman's pulao rice, and maybe somebody else's sabji, and Mataji's cross buns, or whatever, everything's there. This man is hungry, and you're going on describing the meal, of the plate. But that's not enough. He wants to eat it, then only you'll get the satisfaction. All these are showing him everything, but you don't know. So that example is given. And then he says, for bhakti, Brahma says, Narada is quoting Brahma. Brahma says, bhakti is the means, the cause. And the effect is also bhakti. The result is also bhakti. You see, we'll always say, we talk about cause and effect. In philosophy, the big thing, cause and effect, which Krishna also talks about it in the Bhagavad Gita. I can't quote. I know he says that. And so, normally, what is the cause? What is it? I study hard, I get my degree. I get my degree, I get a very nice job. I get a very nice job, I get a lot of money. It goes on like that. But in bhakti, the cause and effect is the same. I do bhakti, what do I get? I get back bhakti. That may be a disappointment. I do bhakti, I get back bhakti. I want something more. But no, bad bhakti is even more. And when you get that devotion, you want to do more devotion. And when you do more devotion, you will get more devotion. So, the final word from Lord Narada and Lord Brahma himself is that devotion itself is the cause and means, and that is the ultimate. Now, many people will say, oh, you know, we also know Krishna. You know, if you go on the road preaching, they'll say, oh, we also know Krishna. Oh, I know Krishna from small. You are only now you are starting Krishna. We have started, you know, my grandfather's time, we were doing Krishna. You know, Krishna is one of the many gods. He is Hindu god. He is North Indian god. They have all these different explanations about Krishna. Now, so in other words, they are saying, you know, don't come and tell me all this. You know, I know. Don't tell me all this. We know from long time. But is that enough? Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prabhatyate. Jnanavan, see, many births, after many births, the jnanavan, the knowledgeable ones, what does he do? Mam prabhatyate. He surrenders unto me. So Krishna says, if you are a knowledgeable one, then you have to surrender to me. That's what is, there is Krishna himself saying that. So, all these people can say so many things, unless they become prapanna to Krishna. Unless they surrender to Krishna, then we don't care about it. We don't care about them. That's how it is. And we have to tell them too. Okay, now you surrender. Now you know so much about Krishna. Why don't you surrender to Krishna? So that is just a point of interest here. So the perfection, like what we are doing, this is the heading of the chapter, the perfection of spiritual knowledge. What is the perfection? The perfection of spiritual knowledge is the next chapter, pure devotional service. That's basically what the title is for today. Perfection of spiritual knowledge will take you to pure devotional service. Now all this is only possible by the mercy of your spiritual master. You have to understand. You may think, you know, I will read this book, I will read that book, I will get my knowledge from here, I will get my knowledge from there. Even if you try to get a book, you won't get. If you don't have the mercy of your spiritual master. I remember many years ago, I was dying to read a Bhagavad Gita. I was running all over the place looking for a Bhagavad Gita. And I just couldn't get. And I was looking all over the place and I couldn't find the Gita. And I gave up. I went to the big temples and they have their huge library. Imagine temples having huge libraries and no Bhagavad Gita. And it's very clearly stated that the Gita is the book for the Hindus. Isn't it? Just, of course, a funny comparison. Just as the Quran is for the Muslims and the Bible is for the Hindus, the Christians, and the Torah is for the Jews, and the Gita is for the Hindus. And they don't have. If you go to a court in India and you know you're supposed to swear, everybody swears on a book. For the Hindus, the Bhagavad Gita is brought there. So all the Hindus are swearing on the book, but they don't know what is inside the book. You know. So it was such a difficult thing for me to get a book. And finally I found the book. And where was it? It was in the attic lying in a corner. And I was shocked when I first saw the book and I was trembling in it. I searched all over, I couldn't find it. Of course it is the Mayavadi version, Chidbhavananda's version, but somehow or other when I read it, I thought the boss, Krishna is the boss. You know, without whatever impersonalist thing they were trying to hide, I said, no, he's the boss. Now let's find out more about him. Now, similarly, what I'm saying is, everything is possible by spiritual master. Sometimes you can find some, because we say Shastra Chakshu, see with the eyes of the scriptures, don't see with your own eyes, see with the eyes of the scriptures. So we can say, no, I read from Jiva Goswami or whatever. But those truths should be verified by your spiritual master. Always ask him and talk to him about it. So you can read, but it should be verified by your spiritual master. Now, without the mercy of the spiritual master, nothing is possible. So we say that we consider the spiritual master like the Supreme Lord. Is that right? You see, technically speaking, the Supreme Lord, of course you all know, we'll say no. Prabhupada was a pure servant. He was not, you know. He always used to say, I am not God, you are not God. Anybody who says he is God, he is a dog. He's full of that. You all know that. But then, so what's happening? Then, you know, how come that spiritual master can do this? So, it is stated that because, though he is not part and parcel, he is part and parcel. He is not the Supreme Lord. The spiritual master is not the Supreme Lord. He is also part and parcel like you and me. But because he is absorbed in the service of the Supreme Lord, what happens is the modes of nature assist him. the modes of nature which create a lot of problem for us. But for him, it assists him. And the Prabhupada gives this example. It's like in the olden days, the king and the ring. Suppose you might by chance you meet the king, and the king gives you a ring. Oh, take this ring. Then you wear the ring. And then what happens? Few weeks later, you come to the palace grounds. And then the soldier says, hey, stop. Then he says, and then, sorry sir, please come in. They invite you inside, they give you everything, and if your clothes are not good, they'll change, even put new clothes for you. Of course, when you go out, they might take back the clothes for the another fellow. But the point is, they give, why, just because you're connected with the king, you're given all this. Similarly, the spiritual master is connected with the Supreme Lord, and because he's connected, the nature, the modes of nature will also back off. And so, when you get connected, just like how Prabhupada Sambandha, you know, we'll talk about that, and just like Guru Sambandha, will also give you a lot of things. You have seen in Guru Prabhupada's life, there are many people, just like he's absorbed in Krishna, but he meets people who are absorbed in the modes of nature, just the opposite. And he says, give up this nonsense and chant. And the next minute they can do that. How? Because of the association of Prabhupada, the association of pure devotee, Prabhupada Sambandha, they also get this benefit. In the early days, some of them, I know, will say that it was difficult, but I've spoken to some who say, no, it was not very difficult really. Prabhupada will say, do this, do that, and then we just do it. We just follow the instructions, and somehow or other, there is no barriers, and things move. And there is one incident about Garga Muni was saying to this once, many years ago. He said there's one time when Prabhupada told him, I can't remember whether it's Los Angeles or California, I don't know where. San Francisco maybe, I don't know, can't remember. So the point is, Prabhupada says, I want to speak to the mayor, make an appointment to speak to the mayor. And Garga Muni is thinking, a mayor? How do I ring and whom I would, what to say and what to do, you know. So how I do it? How do I ask Prabhupada how to do? Simple, take the telephone directory, look for the mayoral office, give them a call and make an appointment. He said, okay, that's easy. So he took the number and he rang. And he said, Swamiji from India, he wants to meet the mayor. And the reply was, when? And he was shocked. He didn't expect that. He thought this was not possible. And he said, when? So, and he was not ready for that because he never asked when. So he had to run and, you know, he said, okay, I'll call back, and went back, and then straight away they gave him a thing, and of course the story goes on that Prabhupada met, and then he saw this Buick town hall, unused, and he said, give us this town hall and we will use it, and, you know, like that. So, what happens is, even though there may be difficulties, but with this association of pure devotees, the modes will act differently, and that way you can do so many things. Then somebody will say, oh yeah, but you know Prabhupada, you know, he never got tickets, you know, he never flew business class, you know, he went into a cargo ship, even that, you know, cargo ship, not even a passenger ship. And then he had two heart attacks on the way, and then, you know, his typewriter got stolen, and his notes were stolen, and, you know, he had so many problems, you know. So they'll go on and on and on. But the point is, it is also for us to understand that we can identify his difficulties. You know, like we go and ask somebody, Prabhu Albert coming for the program or something, oh no, my wife has this and my wife has that, somebody might say. But we also know Prabhupada had problems with his wife. One day he came, his Bhagavatam was gone, and told wife, me or tea, or tea or me. And she said tea, and he said bye bye, and she went off. So, we know all that. See, whatever, you can say, oh, my children are not cooperating with me. Prabhupada's children also never cooperated with him. So like that we can go on, and we can identify. The whole thing is, you know, otherwise if he flew first class, he had frequent flyer points, he got credit card, Samsonite thing, and he had all this, then, you know, we all can't do. You know, we're not trying to be him, but then we'll say it's not too difficult, you know. It's only, you know, he comes from the spiritual world, he can do everything and he go back, you know, then becomes. So we have to understand that these things are also happening. And sometimes there may be, the spiritual master may have some troubles too, and some health problems and all that, but it's all to make us understand that, you know, this is all. Now, just before I wind up, I just want to say a small story about this whole thing, whatever we have read about today, the spiritual knowledge and Uddhava and Krishna and the whole thing. So there was a time, and Uddhava was of course a great learned scholar. He was an expert in the Vedas and Upanishads and the Sutras and the whole works. So one day he meets Lord Krishna and then tells Lord Krishna, "Look, I've studied everything, and you know, it's time, you know, I get some recognition." And he wanted this recognition. You know, those days there was what is called a title called Maharishi. So he said, "It's time that this title be bestowed upon me." Basically, because he was a friend of Krishna, and you know, they have a council, and the council will decide. So he was actually elbowing for support. "Hey Krishna, how about it? You know, what? I know everything. Come on, man. What are you waiting for? Give me something." So Krishna was a bit surprised, but anyway, I asked him, "Do you think you got all the study? I mean, have you studied everything? And are you satisfied? And are you sure your study is complete?" And he never even hesitated for a minute. And Uddhava said, "Yes, I know everything. I've studied everything." Then, Lord Krishna has this pastime with all his devotees, even Arjuna. So he says, "All right." And he sensed a sense of false pride and false ego in Uddhava. And he wanted to correct him there. So what he said was, "Okay, I want to meet you tomorrow. Can you come tomorrow?" He said, "Sure." And then the next day they met. He came, you know, thought, "Oh, today is the day. He's going to do everything for me." And he came in, let's close him. And he said, "Yes, Krishna, you know, I'm ready." He said, "I want you to do a favor for me. I want you to take a message, you know, to Radharani in Vrindavan." So he was very excited. "Oh my God, this is even more exciting, you know, he knows, you know, Radharani is his favorite, and you know, this is, and I'm giving the most exciting job to do. Oh my God, and then my Lord is telling me, you know, to do this job. Oh, nothing can be better than this, and I'll do it, you know, in such a way that he really get pleased with me." So he got up, he was very excited. "Okay, I'm going, I'm ready, gets ready, everything is ready, he's on the chariot and is about to go. And Krishna says, "Bye bye, see you, have a nice day." "No," he said, "where is the message? I'm supposed to see Radharani with a message. Where's the message?" Then Krishna looks at him and smiles. "There's no message. Just go." So he's shocked. And then he said, "Alright, anyway, the Lord says, go, I go." So he's going, of course, you know, those will take a long time to reach anyway. But before he reaching Vrindavan, the actual spot, Radharani's place, then Uddhava was thinking, he's a great scholar. Krishna is not, he's not doing the right thing. He doesn't understand the psychology of Matajis. Matajis love these things. Ladies love these things. They love to be remembered, the birthdays to be remembered, you know, the first time and how they met each other. "Remember, Prabhu, the first time I saw you, you saw me, and I, oh, you can't remember anything, and I remember everything." And so it goes on and on. So he said, no, but the meeting should be so nice that Radharani must be very, very pleasing. "My boss, I cannot let down my boss." So he grabs a piece of paper, parchment of paper, in the sense those days it was like a leaf, palm leaf. So he grabs a palm leaf. And then he says, he imagines, like, you know, how Krishna would write. So he starts, "Hi, hello," and then, "Hi, sweetie pie." Oh, there is no sweetie pie there. "Hi, gulab jamun," or something like that. And then he goes on, you know, this way, that way. Not too long. I don't know. "Miss you so much. Krishna. XXX. Like that. And he's very happy with this. "Wow. This is really good. This will really make Radharani very happy." Closes it. And then he rents, finally lands in the palace or courtyard. And of course he gets royal welcome because it's Uddhava, and Radharani is very, very respectful about him. And
And he gives him the royal welcome and all that. So goes on for a few minutes, and then proudly takes out, you know, and then he says, "This is a special message from my lord." So thinking that Radharani will be very happy with the thing. So Radharani took up the thing, took out the piece of letter, that the so-called message, and then she started. There was silence for a few minutes. She was reading, and then Radharani is laughing hysterically, very, very hysterical laughter. And Uddhava, actually what he wanted was quickly read it. You know, normally when, you know, girls, when they get the letters, they'll, "Oh, nothing, nothing," and they'll keep it in their pocket or run away, and then they'll close the door and then make sure nobody's around, and then they'll open the letter and then read the letter. So he wanted to get rid of, you know, didn't want to get into trouble. You just see like that and then close and put back and then go back to normal. That's what he wanted. But then he opened the letter and she was just looking for a while, and he was getting confused. And then that hysterical laughter really confused him. He said, why are you laughing so much? Why? What happened? Why? So what is the message there? He said, the message says, Uddhava's knowledge is not complete. That was the message in the and he was shocked, and he said, "How do you know?" I mean, he was really in a shock, because there was a discussion about whether your knowledge is complete, and then this and he wrote a message, and the message is not complete. And then he, of course, Radharani gives a whole big number there. I can't possibly repeat all those things, but the point was, she says that, you know, I and Krishna are one, we are two bodies, but one soul, we are eternally together, and, you know, he is my message, he is my letter from the spiritual world, and, you know, you don't need message and letters from you, and, I mean, he doesn't say like that, but that's the implication, and it goes on like that. Now, and then he tells him that, you know, within a few minutes, all these deep spiritual truths Uddhava could understand from Radharani. And he's asking, how come, you know, and he's running after, you know, she's in the house. She's doing a daily chores and he's running behind her. Again, question and answers going on. How do you do this? I mean, you're here, you're a village person, you're in this house. And it goes on, how do you do this, how do you do that? And she's answering him and going about doing a chores. And in a gist of that, what she says is that, you know, you are tainted by false ego, and also you've got a manipulating mind, and worst of all, she says, you dare to use Krishna for your own service. You know, telling Krishna, you know, recommend me in the council so I'll get my title, isn't it? But he didn't realize, he's a friend, Krishna is his friend, so he treated him like that, but, you know, but even that was pointed out, you know, that. And he said, as for me, I trust him, I love him, I think I'm, basically, I'm totally surrendered. I have no doubts about anything. And he said, that is your problem. And he says, you have to wake up and arise. And then, the most important thing is, at one point he will ask about happiness, and he is asking about knowledge. And the third thing he asks is about knowledge, happiness, wealth. Sorry, that's right, wealth. And then she says, pursuit of money is not wealth, pursuit of sense gratification is not happiness, and pursuit of titles, that's what he is after, is not knowledge. That is synergy, there is some similarity in the beginning, but there is conflict at the end. I mean, you'll know that in this, especially, there are a lot of Indian students come to this country to do their masters and MBAs and all that, and there is a big business here because they want those titles, and the titles are very important. But getting those titles doesn't mean knowledge. And basically she was trying to tell him too, you know, just the title is not knowledge. And so he was very happy, you know, he was changed, and next day he was going back. He was going back to Dwarka. And on his way, you know, he sense a change of mood himself, and he was singing, "Hey Govindi, Hey Gopala." He was already in a very, very transcendental mood.
And on his way he saw a sick person and gives a sick person a lift. And then he was enjoying nature, there was a setting sun, and he was totally different. Goes back to Dwarka and then he meets Krishna. And Krishna also sees that, you know, the boy is changed. He's not the same. And then Krishna says, about your title. And the minute when Krishna says about your title, and Uddhava falls at the feet of Krishna and says, oh, I'm sorry, my lord. And he picks him up, I'm so sorry that I had to do this. Then Lord Krishna tells him, your journey is complete, your knowledge is now complete. He said, you will write my teachings in simple language for the ordinary people to read. And those gems of knowledge will not be known even by so many people in so many titles. This because I'm giving it directly to you. These people with so many titles will not know. And the ordinary people will read this and gain the same title what you're talking about, of a Maharishi. And then he says, and for this great contribution, hereafter you'll be called Uddhava Maharishi. And that's how he got his name, Uddhava Maharishi. Then I'd like to close here. And if anybody has any comments or questions,
very well.
I was not trying to insult womanhood, firstly, in case you know. I was just trying to make a joke out of the whole thing so that, you know, the class may be interesting. The difference, of course, the difference only externally we won't know. I mean, the person should know whether it is sentiment or devotion. If you're totally devoted, well, performing devotional service and with pure love, that I would say is it's different from, I mean, a real devotion apart from sentiment. I can talk about a lot of sentiment people, you know, in my experience. And they'll be fixed forever, no matter whatever happens. A lot of people say, yeah, it's Krishna for a while. And the slightest challenge, with the slightest challenge, and then they give up the whole thing. They say, oh no, Krishna has just, he's forsaken me, and like that. So of course real devotion, of course we can borrow an example from Kunti Devi herself, you know, with all her problems she was still always. In this Kali Yuga it's very hard to say who really is or who really isn't. Anyway, my scope is only like, my scope is, I can't go into the deeper thing about devotion. I don't intend to. It's just to say that this material world is full of problems. There are a lot of difficulties. In fact, the future is even going to get worse. In the sense, mental disorders. Mental disorders in the years to come is going to be unbelievable. And that, taking up this practice of devotional service, even though he may not be perfect, but will help you at least lead a normal life. So I can understand the difficulties in the material world. I really can't explain much about the spiritual state one can go in. I have never dealt myself to go there because it is very difficult.
Can I come?
Yeah.
Thanks. Sentimental and real devotion. It is stated in Bhagavata that an individual can never really completely understand the Supreme Lord, but we try our best to be a part of it. When Parikshit asked Sukha, the Bhagavan's mother, about meditation, Sukra Maharishi instructs Parikshit to imagine God as the entire universe with every being as a part of it. Here is where the Vishishta Advaita and the Dvaita differ. The Dvaita says that every human being and God are one, in the sense that inside you, you have God. In sukshma form, in microscopic form.
It's okay, Prabhu, but we are talking about real devotion and sentiment.
Sentiment?
No, we have to, we are not interested in, we practice Dvaita here. That's another, we can discuss that. Between you and me, we can discuss that later, you know.
When Narada Maharishi comes to Ganges, he notices that bhakti is portrayed as life on earth, as human. And Narada and Vairagya, the two other parts, are described as older people. And when Bharata prays, he is asked to compose, he is asked to speak Bhagavata, to give a to read Bhagavata, so that Jnana and Vairagya become beautiful. And he said that in Kali Yuga, bhakti is the path to mukti.
Okay, that we agreed. Now, agreed, bhakti is the path. Now we're talking about different levels. But I'll have the last word here. See, great people have also had their faith shaken. Mother Teresa, for instance, for 30-40 years, she lost her faith 30 years ago, even before she died, in her own letters. Because she didn't have a book called The Teachings of Mother Kunti. Because she felt her problems, I'm serving the Lord, and why I'm so many problems? The God has forsaken me. And of course, they're going to canonize her as a saint, and she has lost faith in God. Said, you know, that's the real thing. In her own words, she has written to a priest in the books, in letters, and the letters were revealed lately. So it's a very, you know, we can argue, we can talk, but it's a very, very dangerous topic here. I'm just want to highlight that when the test comes, we all can see so many things. When the test comes, it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. And that's why I don't want to do this. But I just want you to know that Mother Teresa could have escaped this if she had a book called Mother Kunti. Mother Kunti, she is the auntie of Krishna, the mother of the Pandavas, and she is such a powerful personality. And she can have so much of difficulties. Now, Lord Jesus Christ Himself, when He was crucified, He had this too. Oh my, I can't quote the right verse. My Father, Thou hast forsaken me. He said that. Why hast Thou forsaken me? That's right. He says that. Why have you? So, it can even happen, of course, they are not Vaishnavas in our sense of the word. But you find that the same thing in our context is different. For instance, Bhishma Deva on the battlefield with all the arrows is lying. Of course, that is not sentiment. It's definitely devotion. In fact, Krishna, the same thing that is asked Uddhava, that is, he is asking Yudhishthira to ask, and Bhishma is giving those answers. Why go so far? Even Prabhupada himself on his deathbed, he was still with the he was translating even his deathbed. Not worrying about it. That is real devotion. So it is a very, very highly evolved thing, and it's wrong to say somebody is sentiment or somebody is devoted. Maybe the sentiment will lead on to devotion ultimately. But I've seen many people who are very, very sentimental, of course, in the movement, you know. And I can write a whole book about it. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much for listening patiently. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.